In a previous episode, we hosted Jillian Alexander, the Global Vice President of Learning Services at OpenText. In that episode, we discussed how OpenText is leveraging AI to radically scale their ability to create education materials for customers. Today, we will be clicking into the technology that made that possible. I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association, and welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today, I will be having a conversation with Sarah Sedgman, the CEO of LearnExperts. This is the AI tool that OpenText actually leveraged. And Sarah and I will be discussing specific AI capabilities as well as her experience leading an AI startup. So let's get the wonderful insight engine humming here. Welcome, Sarah. We're going to open up here. Can you provide an overview of the mission of LearnExperts?
Yes, thanks for having me. And at LearnExperts, our vision is really to transform information into learning. We're doing that through an AI engine. And today, what happens is a really small group of instructional designers can create great training. And we want to unlock the potential for anyone to build great training as long as they have that subject matter expertise and are an expert in their space.
Fantastic. And so you have built the capabilities there around OpenAI, right? So you took that language model. So kind of explain how you did that.
Yes, our vision actually many years ago was to take raw content in its existing form. So maybe it wasn't purpose-built yet or in a way that could create great training. And our vision was to take that raw content and turn it into learning content through our platform. So we really took a different approach. We're longtime instructional designers. We've designed, developed, and delivered training for 25 plus years. And so we wanted to take a system, eliminate some of the mundane tasks that a human needs to do, and then use AI to transform that raw content into really good quality learning content so that it would assist and help the human. Of course, the human still needs to make some important, impactful decisions. So we had gone and started to build our own way to do that through AI libraries, algorithms, and rules. But of course, we didn't have a billion or probably more. I don't know what was invested in OpenAI. We didn't have that.
Right.
So we could only get to a certain level of quality. When OpenAI launched, it was an incredible opportunity for us to remove some of the ones that we had built. We still have our own in some cases, but also leverage OpenAI, which was a highly trained model that really drove that quality in learning.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we've put layers and layers of our own subject matter expertise in learning to really drive that high quality that's being generated.
Yeah. So as I hear that, I mean, you know, OpenAI as a platform has just been a huge accelerator for you. I mean, you already were on this path. You had this vision of being able to create this capability, and it just basically just leapfrogged you forward in terms of what you're able to do as a company. And you know, when you talk about raw content, just explain to listeners the types of content you can leverage into your engine to come out with actually meaningful educational materials on the other side.
Yeah, we get this question a lot from our clients, like, what can we use? Yeah, right. So we pretty much say anything. Like, it can be in a doc format, PowerPoint, video file, like a number of different formats that you can use to input in. But the content can be really raw format. So it can be a video that's just like a question and answer style like this that can be used. But also, like for tech clients, it can be a documentation guide or even content from Jira and Confluence from the programming team.
Yep.
And as long as there's some content, then the system does a really good job of leveraging that. It'll help you to rewrite that into a learning style. For video content, it'll actually pull out the audio file and write it into text that follows learning best practice. So there's a whole bunch of logic that we've built in. But in minutes, all of a sudden, you have content that you can leverage that you don't, as a human, have to rewrite in a learning style. So that's what really helps to jump forward as a starting point to save that 67% plus time frame for developing the content. But we have all sorts of different use cases. And of course, our customers are experimenting with even more than we originally set out to suggest and gaining a lot of value using that content from the subject matter experts.
Well, you know, the first time I heard about this use case within education services, right, to leverage AI to help build educational content and the fact that it could ingest, you know, a lot of different types of content, I thought of, you know, my background was in professional services initially. And you think about all these experts who are in your, you know, typically in your embedded PS organization that are creating like tons of customer facing PowerPoints to help explain this and explain that. And that now all becomes potential, right? That you can bring in and now have a much more structured, better, you know, educational set of materials that come out of that. But yeah, I mean, as soon as I heard about this, I'm like, wow, there is a whole wealth of knowledge out there that typically is just in PowerPoint files somewhere and only the PS solution architect knows where it is or whatever. And this is a game changer. But having said that, I am personally very impressed by this use case here. There is still this issue of sort of separating hype from reality and that gap, and people are trying to still understand that. And even you and I have spoken previously, I mean, some people come to the table and they go, well, yeah, I can just, you know, dump a bunch of whatever stuff into your black box and magically all this great stuff will come out. Let's ground the audience, right, in terms of what it does take to effectively leverage AI for content creation.
Yeah, I have actually had people say to me, okay, great, I'll just throw all this stuff in and then in a minute I'll have a course. And also, you know, a lot of the industry is experimenting with ChatGPT. I'm seeing all sorts of different reactions. So either the Leah tool or ChatGPT or other Gen AI tools, like, this is going to be great. I don't need to put any of my own subject matter expertise in around learning. I can just create a course in minutes. And then other people are skeptical that it's even going to generate good content for them. So there's all sorts of different reactions.
The whole spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on our side specifically, for the Leah product, which stands for Learn Experts AI, we purpose-built the system to have the system do things, and there's logic built in from our years of experience, but we wanted to make sure that the human still could make the impactful decisions. Mm-hmm. And so if you're an instructional designer, you can feed this content in, which we know for years and years. I mean, I started my career as an instructional designer 25 years ago. So I know that course developers, instructional designers will go find that content anyway and use that as a base for their course, but they have to manually rewrite all the content, structure it in the right learning framework. And so we know it's important for them to still make impactful decisions. The AI may generate content, but you still need to go through it, make sure that the system has done the right thing, maybe add to it, have it regenerate or rewrite for you, like iterate on it. And same with ChatGPT, of course, people are finding that it can hallucinate and make things up if it doesn't know. It's still really important for us to remember that AI is a tool to help us, but the human still has to go in, make sure it's done the right thing, add to it, structure it the right way for the purpose that you want to use that content for. So we're educating our own clients and customers on that, of course, but the OpenAI is really advancing. It's really exciting to see how quickly that's improving. But also on top of that, we're able to continue to look at learning contents being generated and then add our own layers. Like, we're constantly every week we're adding more and more layers to really drive that high quality output.
Yeah, because I mean, I think the important thing here, you and I were talking before, is, you know, garbage in, garbage out kind of issue here. I mean, you've got to have good quality content coming in. You do have to have expertise wrapped around the AI to make sure that it is good quality educational material coming out. Because again, you're talking about materials to educate your customers on your technology. They better be accurate and effective. They cannot be wrong. They can't, you know, so this is the, you know, the stakes are high there, right? I mean, you want to make sure that it's a quality, you know, end product. But one of the things that we care a lot about as AI is, you know, continues to unfold in a lot of different use cases is what are the best practices in deploying AI? And you're now in a chair where you're getting to see lots of different companies, right, roll up their sleeves and say, okay, let me see how I can use AI and deploy it education services. So what are some of the, you know, the best practices or the winning patterns that you're seeing there?
Yeah, I guess part of when I'm meeting with our own customers, they're asking me the same question. So I'm almost, you know, as a company, we're almost, as we're supporting the customer, guiding them through what to think about and how to roll out their AI strategy, especially for us around the education space. But they're asking questions about, you know, we're in the content authoring space, but also certification. And what about all these AI video tools? And how do we deal with translation? And all of these tools are the same. Like, they can use AI to do something for you to a certain percent. You still need the human to interact and help drive it to completion. Especially that's important when you think about translation in tech, as we can see the translation generation tools don't always translate the technical terms the right way. But some of the best practices we're recommending. So number one, I continue to remind everyone, we've been using AI tools for a long time in the learning space too, like especially around the LMS side to help with personalization and serving up the right training when someone's consuming training. So it's nothing new. It's just the generative AI component is newer. And so we all need to treat it like we'd research and look at any other tool. Reach out to people who you know, and starting with a strategy is important. So I am seeing a lot of companies kind of just jump in and say, well, let's just try a bunch of things, but you need a strategy around it. So I recommend, like, pick your top one or two pain points that you can't solve today with any other tool or AI component. Go research tools or ask, you know, your peers in the industry, what are they trying or seeing, pros and cons. Build out a use case and then try that one use case, but the change management piece. So try the use case, feel it. Did it help improve, you know, help your team through the change management piece? But the companies I'm seeing most successful at implementing the AI productivity faster are the ones that are coming at it from a strategic approach. So at the top level, maybe it's coming from the C-level or maybe it's coming from the middle management layer, but there's a strategy around, you know, we're going to have the AI components help us gain productivity in the following areas to start. And they'll set out some goals for the year, whatever that looks like for their company, and help guide their team through applying that. The companies I'm seeing just say, well, we have to look into AI because it's the hot topic and, you know, everyone's talking about it. Those companies, because the team below who's trying the solution doesn't have, you know, a great strategy from the top as to how they're fitting AI into their strategy, those are the companies I'm finding, you know, are kind of looking at a number of different solutions and not really sure
what to do,
where to end. Yeah.
So you're validating some themes that have played out on some, you know, earlier episodes here on this topic. And I'm just going to play them back because I think it's worth just emphasizing these critical patterns, right? So one of them that you're on there is being very deliberate and clear about the use cases you're going after. Identify where, and again, this difference between just, hey, let's pilot some tools or let's give some people some tools and see what they do with them or whatever. I agree with you. I don't think that's a winning strategy. I think that, you know, there's a thrashing motion there. So be very deliberate. Like you said, have a strategy. Okay, you know, what use case are we going to go after first? What are we going to go after second? And let's really work. What you also said, the change management, because people aren't going to naturally just adopt these tools just because you say, hey, this is really cool, you should go use this.
Yeah.
You know, so there's absolutely a change management component with the people that are involved here, in this case, you know, content developers. And then the other important thing you said, and I see this pattern as well, is companies where executive management has said, look, this is strategic. We are going to prioritize this. We're going to create some roadmaps here. We're going to create some investment, you know, roadmaps here. And we're going to keep our executive eyes on this and make sure we're making progress. You see progress. If the executive team's still not convinced maybe that they should be worried about this yet, again, we'll see what, you know, where AI goes in 6 months or a year or whatever, then yeah, you're not seeing a lot of progress. But it is, I will tell you, and I'm sure you're seeing this, it's starting to create this ever-growing gap. So when you're dealing with a company that has leaned into it, I'm sure you have, you know, many of your customers, they've leaned into it. They've been chipping at it now for months or over a year, or whatever, and they're seeing some just massive progress versus the companies who are still fiddle-farting around going, oh, I'm not sure. Now you wake up and there's an education services organization that's generating content way more cost-effectively, way faster, better volume, and they look completely different from other, you know, or I mean, the gap is getting pretty big here.
Yeah. And the companies that are taking that approach, first thinking about the right strategy, picking some use cases, starting in, like there's been some clients that we've worked with for at least 2 years, maybe 2.5 years now. They're already way ahead of all these other companies as well. Yeah. And in particular in the education space, I don't know, anyone who's in the learning space will know that there's never enough headcount or people to take care of all the learning needs. So that's why these companies are really getting ahead as they're driving that productivity. And it's going to give them, if not already, a competitive advantage over others that they compete.
Well, you know, the old saying, necessity is mother invention. And I really, when we look at who is leaning into AI across, you know, the different organizations within technology companies, support services is a big early effective adopter, but education services is right there. And if you would ask me a year ago, who do you think is going to be big adopters of AI? Who's going to lean into it? I would not put a lot of money on education services, probably unfairly, right? It just was, no, they're probably a little bit more conservative here. But what you just said is so true. Embedded education service organizations are so strapped for resource compared to the demand, what the company wants from them. And it's one of those things where companies, you know, they want it, but they don't want to spend money on it, right? So you have these poor ES folks just trying to create the best content they can, never can get incremental headcount. And so that, it really creates the pressure, but the motivation for these ES departments to raise their hand and go, hey, we need a better mousetrap. This is really could be a game changer for us. And that's why I think you see such success early on within ES.
So there's that. There's definitely, and I lived it because I ran some of the largest learning organizations in the industry for different tech companies. The management team definitely, but also people who are building the courseware feel pressure all the time. Yeah. So now all of a sudden, the advances in AI is relieving that pressure. Mm-hmm. And there's two camps. So there's one that is like, well, no, we've been doing it this way for 20 plus years. We know how to do it. We don't need a system to help. And then there's the middle camp that's like, okay, we'll start to look at it. And then there's like the camp that's like, we're going all in because finally we're able to get through all of the backlog and finally, you know, meet the goals.
Very exciting.
And in the learning space, like we have years and years of data, and also TSA produces this data on how long it takes to design, develop, and deliver training. Yeah. So we know exactly in the traditional process, it takes
what good looks like.
Yeah, X number of hours to produce in our training content. It's really easy then to show how the AI technologies and tools are helping to speed that up, and really easy to benchmark.
Yep.
And that is helping like the learning orgs who have the strategy piece, it's helping them then communicate up to the senior or the executive staff to say, these tools are helping us be X more productive, but we need the funding to continue to fund them so that we can continue to be productive. And it's not about replacing headcount in the learning organizations, because we've always had not enough. It unlocks the potential to use the headcount that's there to do a lot more things finally, whereas previously it just had to be a manual process with people who had the experience to do it.
Well, two comments on what you just said there. So first of all, those three camps that you described, those three camps exist now in every organization within tech, right? So those three camps exist in professional services, right? Hey, how's AI going to change, you know, the way I do implementation or integration, right? And are they leaning in? Or are they have their arms crossed? I think that is playing out just in department after department after department, right? And I think there's no doubt that the winning play is you want to lean in, because what you just said, it's going to make, you know, everybody more productive. There's just no doubt about it. The other thing is you talked about benchmarks. And again, one of the winning attributes is picking workflows where you have good benchmarks and you know what the current good looks like. And you can say, well, look, this is now we're very crystal clear on the benefits we're getting from AI, right? But it also creates this new phenomenon. And JD, what our CEO and I were just talking about this last week, because, you know, we do benchmarking for a living, right? I predict in the next 3 years, all of our benchmarks are going to be radically changed. So, you know, like you said, the industry understands what does good look like, you know, historically to create 1 hour of content, education, you know, content. It typically takes X amount of hours of traditional labor. that benchmark is going to become meaningless in an AI-enabled world. And that's happening, again, across the board. Any kind of benchmarking, how long does it take to close a support ticket? What percentage of support tickets are completely self-serving? You know, all those types of KPIs are going to be changing. So it's going to be exciting to watch. But I want to get down a different thread here. So you and I were discussing the fact that some of your customers, when you're working with them, they're like, I just want you to actually just run the whole play for me, right? You know, here's my raw content, here's my sources, back to this headcount issue and back to this resourcing issue, right? I'm just so strapped here. So I'm curious, do you think as there's more and more companies like yourselves who are AI native companies building a valuable solution on top of, you know, an AI engine, that managed type offers are going to be important to them, where customers are going to say, look, you know, I don't want to deal with the change management. Yeah, I don't have the resources. Can you just literally run the play, soup to nuts? What are you seeing there?
I definitely think that's an opportunity coming. It will be interesting to see how companies react to the productivity gains. And you're right, all the metrics will change. So I can picture for TSA, maybe it's like you have the traditional metrics in a company that uses AI.
That's right. Different peer group. Yeah.
But then the opportunity, like in our case, you know, we do that today. We'll have companies that for whatever reason, you know, maybe they're still trying to get approval to use AI tools. So in the meantime, they'll have us use our system to build training and they'll provide the wrong content
on their behalf.
And then in combination with the system and our subject matter experts in instructional design, we can build the training and we go back to them and say, okay, here's the course. We took your video content and built an e-learning course in an hour. And they're blown away.
Yeah.
Of course, our subject matter expertise is in there. So, you know, it opens the door to maybe look at, you know, we'll build you a course in a day for X amount of dollars kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see then if companies start to decide to outsource pieces or elements of this, not just for learning, but like for many different aspects, because the AI is able to help someone who's not a technical subject matter expert get part of the way there to provide the solution.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is going to be an interesting build versus buy decision, depending on the AI use case, right? Where you say, well, I could either kind of build out this muscle by, you know, retraining my people, by implementing, by purchasing some of these technologies, or if somebody could literally just come to me with the end deliverable that I care about, and they're doing it in a really cost-effective way because they have an AI-enabled, you know, engine to do that, maybe I just write a check. So I think it's going to be interesting, but also, you know, leads us into this conversation on pricing models. So one thing that really strikes me, you know, all these AI use cases that we're documenting for TSI members, and again, the one at OpenText with Jillian was one of the early ones that I did, is the impact, you know, using these capabilities is not small, it's large, right? And so like in your case, you're going to be taking out 40%, 50%, 67% of their effort to deliver and create content. So does that enable companies like yourself with these types of solutions to have more what I call outcome-based pricing as opposed to a traditional software pricing model per user, et cetera? So can you just, you know, have the example of, hey, we could charge per course created. That's an outcome. You know, and that'd be our pricing model instead of, you know. So what are you seeing there? What are you thinking there?
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting question. And because I've been at the TSA conference, I've heard you talk about the outcome-based pricing too. I agree with you. I think you've been saying for many years, you know, that SaaS-based companies need to change their approach to pricing. The model that we have today is not going to work for the future. Yeah. I agree with that. What I see right now is that companies still expect to have subscription pricing per user, like the ability to have flexibility in how they pay. But I definitely think there's opportunity to switch to a more outcome-based pricing. And that's better for the customer. It's better for the company. Because what I see right now is that companies may sign up for a number of different technologies. They may not have gone through that, you know, having a strategic approach with goals and the right use cases.
Yeah.
And then it sits on the shelf. So they're paying, but they're not getting to an outcome.
They're not getting the value,
And part of that is actually what you just had said, you know, getting the whole team to change their approach to the process, to having a system do things that maybe they did as humans. I hear a lot of the time, well, I know how to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't need a system to do it for me. And that prevents a company from getting to that outcome quickly. Mm-hmm. So they're spending money, but not getting the outcome. So I hope to see a shift in the industry. It definitely opens the door to that, especially, you know, going back to just like, it's really in the education space, it's really easy for us to say, this is a traditional model and this is how long it takes and what it costs. Mm-hmm. We have so many metrics around that from so many years to, you know, implementing these AI tools is going to help you be this much more productive. If you take your team and run them through that process, it's going to take you this long to get there. If you hire an outsource, it's going to take you this long. But definitely the models around that outcome-based pricing is interesting.
So yeah, well, you know, as I listened to you, what kind of popped in my head was this outcome conversation almost could be a way. So, you know, you're talking to a company, you're saying, look, there's a better mousetrap here. There's a better way for you to do content, right? But as you just described, well, they get, you know, maybe they don't really want to change. Maybe it's going to take us a while. And so a model where you said, hey, I'll tell you what, let's just, in a sense, sort of do a bake-off. Let us generate some course content for you, right? Give us, you know, your raw content. And we'll do it in X amount of time at X amount of cost. And then, you know, have your other people do it the traditional way. And if you ran that play a couple of times, it would not take long for a company to realize, okay, either I'm just going to outsource all this to you because it's way more, or I am going to ramp it up and get my team to change because it's clear the old model is, again, takes way much more time, much more expensive. It's not like they're saving 10%. You know, it's such a gap. So it's almost a way to sort of accelerate, you know, the proof point, you know, with these customers to say, yeah, let's do a little bake-off here. We'll just give you an example. Just give us one course to do and we'll just show you how the model works. I don't know, but I do think that, again, the benefits are so dramatic that anybody in education services, you cannot avoid this conversation for long. I just don't think you can have your head in the sand and say, well, you know, we're really comfortable with the way we do it. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and it really is rapidly changing, even month to month. Just, you know, the number of inquiries that we get just in general, or the number of webinars that are focused on this topic, especially in education around AI and the advancements and what people are doing, is just, I'm seeing it rapidly increase. So the conversation will be there. We are experimenting with some different models. So the model you just talked to, we do have a large $1 billion+ company that's engaged with us to have us come in and help them with their overall strategy, show them how they gain productivity through AI tools. But they've also bought licenses of our software. And so the plan is then to train their learning organization on how to do it. And the ELT down is watching this. So, and they're reporting back up, you know, the time savings and the productivity and how we're going to get there. So, and there's other companies that are like OpenText. Jillian has a clear strategy on how she wants to incorporate this. And she's working with her team and we're helping them to do it themselves.
Right. Yeah. I think there's going to be, you know, several different flavors in play for sure, which leads to sort of the futures, right? Where things are going to go. And as you just said, things are changing already so rapidly month to month. Just, it's kind of mind blowing, right? How it's like, oh my gosh, there's this new capability. And I didn't know, yeah, I could do that. It is pretty crazy. But, you know, if you just go out 3 years, 5 years, how do you think AI is going to, you know, impact the way technology companies are creating educational materials? What do you see there?
5 years from now, it's going to be through the AI components. There's just so many reasons why a company would not want to do that, like to continue with the traditional process. I can't see how or why, because there's just so many early examples already of just even like video production. Like you think of the age old video production, right? We used to have like green rooms in a studio and you'd go in there and you'd record the content and you'd have to have the right voice and all of that. And then that employee would leave the company and then you had to update a little portion of the video and you couldn't because that person wasn't around anymore. So you had to do the whole thing. And now there's all these AI tools where you can feed text in and you could choose an avatar and they have the professional sounding voice. And in minutes, you have a video. So why companies would want to go back. There was one company I was talking to, they create professional videos for their training. It takes them 10 weeks to produce. So why they would want to go back to do that, I don't know. But I do think in the next 3 to 5 years, there'll be massive advancements in learning tech in other areas as well. And then the change management piece will kick in, and the C-level will realize how productive they can be. Mm-hmm. In the learning space, more education creates better skills. It creates a better competitive advantage. It gets people to adopt your solution. Like, there's just so many positive reasons why you need the learning. It's just that in the traditional process, it's been slow. And so companies are used to always being behind or not being able to count on necessarily having all the training that they need. Now, unlocking the potential to productively produce that faster and not necessarily need all of the subject matter expertise is just going to unlock so much potential that the people leading the organizations are going to create strategies around this. It will change. I personally predict we won't need as much deep instructional design experience like the ADDIE models and some of these really formal instructional design models won't be followed as much. Like, you still need the right framework. You need that show me, let me try, test me. But even we're proving out you can train a system to do that. But you still need the human. It helps if you have experience in how to structure that and add the right interactive components and create a good learning experience. But in 5 years from now, especially with all the young folks coming into the workforce, it's going to be a lot different.
Yeah. And for those not familiar, so this ADDIE model, and the only reason I know this is because Maria Manning Chapman, who leads our education services, educates me on this stuff, right? So we were literally just talking recently about the fact that that model is a foundational model for people in education and, you know, how do you create good content and help people learn, all that kind of good stuff. She was just saying that, you know, there are members that she works with that they're sort of so wedded to that, right? That this is the only way. This is how you got to create materials. This is the format they got to follow, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, this stuff's moving so fast. To what you just said, what good learning looks like, the way it's done, is going to be different 3 to 5 years from now. It's just going to be different. And if you're in the business of education services, you need to just lean into that. Because if you want to double down, just say, no, this is, we've always done it this way, and this is the model. And if it doesn't adhere to this model, it's no good. That is going to be a losing thought. And it's not going to take 10 years for that to play out. I mean, it's going to move fast. But it's also super exciting, because the other thing you commented on there is, you know, we've always talked to you for years about the adoption gap, the gap between all this feature functionality that technology companies love to throw out into the wild and the inability of your customers to actually consume it, right? And education is one of those things in between there that tries to close that gap down. And what you're saying is there's going to be just new ways for people to learn, better tools for it, the materials will be better, they'll be more personalized, all this good stuff. It's going to help close that gap down so that your customers can be way more effective with your technology, which, by the way, it's going to help adoption, it helps expansion, it helps renewal, it reduces your support costs. As you know, customers that are well-trained have less support issues. That correlation we've known for ages, but we've underfunded the education motions, right? And so there's a lot of exciting goodness here, you know, in terms of the end game. So I think that's all. It's like, there's two more questions I wanted to get on the table though with you. And one of them was, I am curious, because you're the first CEO on here from what I'll call an AI native company. You know, you're not a traditional SaaS company, but this is really AI native. So I am curious, and you've been worked at a lot of companies in tech, so you know what other, you know, the profiles look like. What is different about a software company that is AI native like your company? Is there different roles? Is there different ways that you think about scaling? And just how would you describe that?
Yeah, certainly expertise around the AI piece is important. So like, even with us leveraging the generative AI, it's all about how do you do the right prompt engineering to get to the right result? How do you add the right subject matter expert layers? Like I described the layers, our tech stack is like, well, there's the platform that does the whole end-to-end process faster, but then there's that, you know, open AI generative AI layer, and then there's the subject matter expertise on top of that. And then there's, you know, other components that build out the rest of the tech stack. But I think the combination of the subject matter expertise working with the AI, like what really differentiates us is we have 25 plus years of experience in designing and developing training and delivering training. And so we know how to, it's probably not the right word, but manipulate the AI to do the things we know the industry needs exactly. And that's why then people who see the technology are like, oh my gosh, like this does exactly what I need it to do, or it does things that I wish I didn't have to do all these years. So, so you have to have those aspects. And then right now for us, what we're seeing is just the customer success piece, like actually really partnering with our customers to help them work through the use cases that they're trying, because this is new for them. So they're asking us for a lot of advice around, well, what use cases should we try? How should we roll this out? Like, should we start with a proof of concept? Should we start with 5 people? Should we start with 20? And so we're working with them quite closely to advise in a different way than just how to use the technology. So I think...
So let me pause on that, because at least 2 things you've said there, right? Number one, obviously sort of different technical skills, the prompt engineering, you know, so that's different. But this is really interesting about how you're working with customers. Because you think about a traditional, let's say, enterprise software company, you build a product, and one thing you do is you're like, I got to get a bunch of salespeople to convince the customer to write the check, and then boom, you know, they get them on the platform, I'm on to the next thing. And what you're saying is, you know, with an AI solution like this, we are being much more intimate with the customer on their workflows, like their particular use cases. We've got to spend more quality time there. So it's so kind of like this balance between, you know, I need a bunch of salespeople to stick the landing, or I need, you know, CS type of people. You know, you're more weighted on the CS side to basically get that customer, you know, successful across the goal line, et cetera. So did I get that right? Is it a different balance than a traditional software company there?
I definitely think so. I think in the sales process, inserting that subject matter expertise is important. Like as we're going through the discovery call with the clients, it's more like, what pain points do you have today that you can't solve through technology? And then on the flip side, then we walk them through that use case in the demo so that they can see that use case play out and how much easier it is with the AI and the end-to-end process, the system. And then they sign on, it's time to start using the product. Let's walk through your use cases and help you figure out how to use the system to the value that you're trying to get to, and then guiding them through that. So we spend a lot of time too in one-on-one meetings sometimes, because we realize this is all new. They're trying to figure this out and experience it, and they don't necessarily have a peer that they can go to ask. They're asking us. So it looks a little different. And the other point I'd make is, I think the advancements in AI are enabling companies like ours to be quite nimble. So we don't need all the layers of people necessarily to achieve what we're trying to achieve. So I think we're going to see that too as we go forward.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that AI native companies are going to be able to basically manage more revenue with less people. Sell it, deliver it, support it. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So if you think about tech historically, if you were a software company and your average revenue per employee was somewhere north of $350,000, you'd say, hey, we're doing a pretty good job. I think AI native companies, that number is going to be way higher. I can already see it happening. But I also hear, as you're describing that customer engagement, again, everybody involved that's customer facing there with your team has got to really understand these education workflows. And it's not like you can have a generic salesperson, right? Who's like, okay, I know the tech specs or whatever, right? You know, it's like you have to have people that, again, are way more, we'll use the term verticalized, really intimate with those use cases in that area. So I think that's also different than traditional tech companies, because you get away with being way more horizontal, you know, sort of more generic, go from customer to customer, different use case, whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be true as well.
Honestly, the best sellers for us right now are the people using our software and then telling others about it. Like, you have to use it because these are my
use cases. They told 2 friends and they told 2 friends. And
then it's starting to make me think, like, maybe I should hire these advocates to be our sales team, because today when you're talking to learning organizations or other organizations like HR using our LEIA product, also partner enablement, sales enablement. So anyone who's in enablement or learning, but we are getting requests from product managers and, you know, PMO office. We really have to understand the questions that they have for us. And when we're talking to a learning organization, some of the questions they have are like, well, does the system produce Bloom's level 3? If I just have a generic salesperson, they have no idea what that means. So the ability to be able to answer those questions and help guide them through what the system's capable of compared to the human is really important.
Well, here's a prediction. I think that your early adopters absolutely could be your best future salespeople, because they're going to be the ones that understand, you know, how the world has changed, and they can help stick that landing with other companies that aren't there yet. So it's going to be fun to watch. All right, I have one last question for you here. I'm watching the clock. So this is a big move you made to go to an AI startup. You know, you had a very successful career in traditional tech companies. And so for anyone who's thinking about this, right, because this wave of AI technology is going to come through, it's going to create opportunities for people to think about, hey, I've been at a traditional tech company, maybe I should go try a startup thing. What would you consider peers of yours to think about if an opportunity is staring them in the face there? How did you process on this?
Actually, I get this question from some of my old peers in the industry.
Who are
in tech companies. For me, my vision around what we could do for the industry was just so strong that I left my C-level job and said, I'm going to create a startup. I was in a position where I could do that as well and take a big risk. So it was a good time for me. But I just did not see learning technology companies solving pain points that we had for so many years, that we had ideas on how to do it. Perhaps we were a little naive because we're like, if we build it, they'll all come. So of course, it is not for the faint of heart to like build your own company, you have to go raise money and do all these things that when you live in a corporate job, you don't know how to do. So you have to learn. But what I will say is for people who are deep experts in a space, and like we are, if you have ideas and you feel you have the grit to do it, go for it. Because I think it's the people who have lived the pain points and think there's got to be a better way or a different way and go try and solve those business problems in a unique way. It's those companies that are changing the game for the industry. And I see it in other examples too. If you have a vision and you feel you have the grit and the timing to do it, go for it. Because I think these are the companies that are really going to impact how we do, in my case, education, but how we do these things in the future.
Yeah, no, I love that. I mean, that's really a killer insight because, again, if you're somebody who's been in tech for a while, you know what's broke. You know where the big friction points are. And now we're at this unique inflection point in time where there literally is a brand new capability in play at scale that could totally change the way you know things are being done, workflows are being done, and you have the expertise where you know where the friction is, you know what's broke. You could add a lot of value to that if you lean in and say, I want to embrace, you know, how, you know, we can make it better with this next generation of technology. So that's it's great insight.
Yeah, and I can really relate to like my team and myself when we're chatting with our clients and customers and even just people in the industry, we can really relate to those challenges. And it's like, yeah, we lived that too, but here's how we're going to solve that. Here's how it's going to help you. And here's how we can help you do that. So I think those are things that taking people from those jobs and creating new technology really makes a difference.
Yeah, that's exciting. I think that's why we're in this industry. It's the ability to take technology and really change the way, you know, people are operating for the better, for their company, you know, the benefit to their company, but also benefit to their customers, all that good stuff. So yeah, it's fun. Well, hey, I really, really appreciate your time in here today, Sarah. This was a great conversation. And again, everybody listening, I keep encouraging folks that if you think that this is just all hype and this is just a fad here that's going on with AI, it is not. And yeah, I always end these episodes with a question of the day. And so my question of the day, this is going out to all of our friends out there in the world of education services. Are you still generating educational content without any help from AI? Why? Cheers, everybody.